So we're having seven Brits, right?
Are they staying here next week?
I don't know.
Are they going to be here for like the layer during the week, next week?
Only Monday or Tuesday.
Because that's a huge difference.
I did. So she asked me to let her know during the day that she needs to accept her meals for the night. So I'm going to call them while they're on the road and see if they're, okay, what time they're eating.
Maybe need to have a diet change, some of the lamb stew or whatever those breads eat.
No, we don't. We're talking about. We finished Oh No Man Anything in verse chapter 13, verse 8. Now it's but to love one another. So love is the only debt. And then Jesus throws this incredible thing into here. So let's go to Matthew 5. This morning's Bible study might hurt. Verse 43, you have heard that it hath been said, thou shalt love thy neighbor and hate thine enemy. But I say unto you, love your enemies, bless them that curse you, do good to them which that hate you, and pray for them which despitefully use you and persecute you, that you may be the children of your Father which is in heaven. Now, that sounds conditional, that if you love your enemies, that's how you get to be a child of your Father which is in heaven. But that's not what it means. It means that if you are a child of your Father in heaven, you love your enemies. Now, what is an enemy and what is a friend? Jesus screwed us up on that one worse than almost anything. Because in John, let's go to John 15 so you don't think I made it up. You think I made it up?
Too late.
There is no John 15.
There's no John 15. So you're going through the Bible and creating the Kiala version. Verse 15. Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth, but I have called you friends. For all things that I have heard of my Father have I made known unto you. So to be a friend has something to do with letting them know all things that you know or that you think. You understand? You got a feeling for that? Now that doesn't sound, if you do that, that won't sound like you're a friend. But we're not of this world.
Just like tell your enemies how much you don't like them.
No, I'm saying, who do you consider your friends? Look at it from the other standpoint. Who are your friends? Well, if they're not your friends, unless you've told them everything. As based on this kind of definition for a minute, if you accept it, if you don't, then listen anyway. You identify in the context of your daily life, in many ways then you have identified your enemies as someone that you think is powerful, someone that is your boss, someone that you have reason to fear. And so what happens? You withhold from that person or that group of people that you that can do you harm in your mind. Do you understand what that means? So, by definition, then, in your mind, the people that are powerful or the people that can do you harm or your bosses or something, whatever that context is, then in a spiritual sense, they are your enemies. Can you buy that? John?
I think so.
This has to do with transparency and
vulnerability. You're cautious about revealing anything to them because in your mind they're dangerous. Now, for some of you, that's me. So you won't rebel or create disturbances because that would might create a conflict. And so what you do is you continue to show deference. Sometimes you use humor. But you keep whatever you're going it's going on within you a secret. And this can go on for years and years and years. In fact, one of the most interesting aspects of this is that you by those kinds of actions, you may consider your spouse an enemy because of what you withhold. Now somehow that withholding, it's done to protect you. Because in your mind, you've created an a priori deal that if I say this, then that will cause a conflict and that will cause me harm, and so I keep it quiet. But there's still, you show deference, you show, you know. You got this as a predicate? Anybody can understand this in their own personal life? It means you act like you're in submission, or you act like you're preferring their interest, or you so you do everything that's expected of you. This is especially true in work situations. You do everything that's expected of you, but you do it in a way so that the boss or whoever gets no pleasure from it. And that's hard to explain, and we may have to spend some time in that. But you do it in a way that, and the reason is because you cannot, the way we are constructed, you cannot really join with them because you think of yourself as separate from and dangerous to you. So you're in this kind of never-never land. If any of you have worked for large corporations, you see that this is really the glue that holds that corporation together. And it's this constant kind of maneuvering internally, and it's just from a spiritual standpoint, it is absolutely sickening. And it's even more true in the religious world, in churches. You can't afford to say what you really think, and so you act like you're a friend, or you act like you're, you know, turn to someone and tell them you love them three times, or touch your neighbor. everything is done in a, even if it's outwardly seems to be joyful, it's done in sullenness. I just hit a button.
Maybe he's painting a real bad picture.
What?
A real bad picture.
Too bad it's true. Anybody know what
I'm... Sounds accurate to me.
Huh?
Sounds accurate to
Anybody
me.
Know what I'm talking about, Gary?
Ken does.
Gary?
Even the new guy comes back and he can't believe it. He's got to still think about Gary. I love it.
I love it.
Huh? No, give me an example.
Of deference?
Of what I've just talked about.
Things I won't tell you because you're going to expose me publicly.
Things you won't tell your wife?
Things I might not tell my wife.
Might not? There's, it's amazing to me how your language always gives you an out. It has to be a practiced art.
It's a skill I've learned over here.
Yeah, I know. And so nobody, they won't be able to say anything is withheld from them. Because you'll use language for sorcery to ensure that you're always in a protected place. I want you to give me an example in your own life.
I'm going to give you one as soon as it wells up. I just don't have one. I'm protecting myself.
It's cunning defiance. It's love with dissimulation. Therefore, it is no love. Therefore, from God's perspective and in our interactions, you have made that person your enemy. Even if it's the one closest to you. And you will respond to that person internally based on those facts. In other words, so that love will die. I hope you understand. So there's really a subconscious plague to protect you. But it really, in reality, it is a plague, spiritually, it's a plague of leprosy. And it's what it is, from the law standpoint, is it's the leprosy of your forehead. Which means that you are forever alone. You can't even be with other lepers. And that creates a loneliness that is haunting. And some of you know what I'm talking about. But you will never, ever identify that as loneliness. It will always be somebody else's fault. Will always be it's really sick. I mean, it's really, really, really sick. Now, some of you, those of you that may have been married once or twice, know this perfectly. You know what happens. For others, you all obviously know it in friendships and relationships here. You see how there's this constant kind of just below the surface nervousness and angst. And this is your religion. This is what God sees as your religion. Is anything welling up now?
Just a lot of stuff, nothing to protect.
And this is what this is, it's the worst form of hypocrisy. Because it's hypocrisy that for 99.99% of the cases can never be identified as hypocrisy, even by yourself. It's become a way of life, a way of living, a way of being that the gospel cannot penetrate. And I think this is why Jesus did these two things. He said, in the first place, remember, the love in the law was the love that was for the children of your people. I mean, of your type. I forgot the exact phrase. It's in Leviticus 19. You don't have to go there. Leviticus 19. We just read it yesterday. Thou shalt not avenge nor bear any grudge against the children of thy people, but thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. So what you have done is you have identified your neighbor as the children of your people. And the great example of this is how Jews are forbidden to charge usury to other Jews. But they are not... Let's go there. Real quick. It's Deuteronomy 23. I'm going to show you this. See, I don't think a Bible study is a Bible study unless it touches your heart. Otherwise, it's just philosophy. That's why many people don't like this. Many, meaning almost all.
This is like being a sacrifice and being cut open and everything exposed.
But if it's not exposed, even if you're feeling it, then it becomes, if it's possible, it becomes double leprosy. Deuteronomy 23, I forgot what verse it was. What verse did I say? 19. Well, that's good. Let's start at 17. There shall be no more whore of the daughters of Israel, nor a sodomite of the house of Israel. Thou shalt not bring the hire of a whore, the price of a dog, into the house of the Lord thy God for any vow. For even both these are abominations unto the Lord thy God. Thou shalt not lend upon usury to thy brother. Usury of money, usury of usury of anything that is lent upon usury. Unto a stranger thou mayest lend upon usury. Here's all of the Illuminati and the powerful bankers that are controlling the world, conspiracy theories. But anyway, the reason... But we're so far fallen that, you know, there they couldn't do these things among their big children of their people, but we do it to each other all the time. We withhold. We say we're friends, but, you know, we withhold what's going on, the truth, because again, of fear. You know, so a great definition of a friend is someone that knows everything there is to know about you and likes you anyway. We've practiced so long to keep these things secret, to keep, and again, it's just a life of lies.
Well, many times in my life, I've always had a bit of a big mouth when it comes to interpersonal relationship with us. Putting it all on the table, maybe not everything, but really saying what I really feel.
Again, the operative word is not everything.
Well, okay.
Your language reveals a lot of that.
And, but I find that when I've done that, in most circumstances, the person that I'm trying to treat as my true friend by this definition gets amazingly defensive, and it blows up in many cases. So
you're saying this hasn't worked for you?
I'm saying it has mixed results.
But I'm saying to you that the reason it has mixed results is because it wasn't in weakness and emptiness. It was in calculated release.
I'll grant you that, but...
So therefore it was manipulation.
I'm not that fiendish.
Yes, you are.
You only started knowing me a year and a half ago.
That's plenty.
So we live our lives in a lie. And we wonder why God isn't moving in the way He thinks we should be moving, or we think He should be moving. We're going to spend a few days on this. Let's go to that scripture we read in Galatians. Yesterday we stopped. Galatians 5. We stopped at verse 9, a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. Now we've just identified a whole new range of leaven. Again, verse 7, you did run well, who did hinder you that you should not obey the truth? This persuasion cometh not of him that calleth you. A little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. I have confidence in you through the Lord that you will be none otherwise minded, but he that troubleth you shall bear his judgment, whosoever he be. And I, brethren, if I yet preach circumcision, why do I yet suffer persecution? Then is the offense of the cross ceased. I would that they were cut off, even cut off, which trouble you. For brethren, you have been called unto liberty, only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even this, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. But if you bite and devour one another, take heed that you be not consumed one of another. Now, What I'm saying to you is all of these subconscious in many ways, because they're not really subconscious, but they're like asking a fish to describe water, because you've done it your whole life. These little, they're not subconscious, but what you have to see is these all these dealies are occasions to the flesh. They're occasions to pull you off your momentary visit to the mercy seat. And it must stop, so that the mercy seat can be your permanent residence. So again, it's the Father's good pleasure to give you all things freely, so that He will perform that which He hath called you to do, so that you know that He has wrought all your works in you, so that your only job is just to be, but to be openly. Otherwise, everything you do is based on manipulation. And there is no love. So this is Love Your Neighbor 101. Anybody have any thoughts on all this? Anybody remember what I said? I will just say this. You put a true believer into the web, and secret envy doesn't enter his heart. He already has everything. He has absolutely no fear of men. He joyously gives every achievement, every power, every earthly advantage its due. And that's why the believer is always a sign and a wonder. Not because he runs around and tells everybody to accept Jesus as their personal Savior, but because his openness and his integrity is a sign and a wonder to everyone around him. Otherwise, again, you're just mouthing philosophy. Anybody have any response to any of this, Mr. Osana? Nope, nobody has any examples or confessions of doing this?
Well, to me it brings to the statement about the moat or the, you know, whatever, the moat.
All that. Yeah.
Because this is our community, our body, you know, our fellowship is, it's the normal Christian life. It's, you know, it's the closest thing to what it should be. But there's little things that could be improved, you know. But if I'm thinking all these things that could be improved, what am I holding back?
Yeah, no, it's, you have to be, and this is to everybody here. It isn't to, this is going to take a couple days until we are able to begin to confess our faults one to another.
Well, what do you want to hear?
Yeah. Which one of a million faults do you want to hear?
I don't want to hear anything. I want to hear what's going on inside you, as I always do, because that what you think is dark to you will bring light to somebody else. I don't have any schedule of what I'd like you to do. I would like to know if any of this preaching brought anything to mind. Again, that's philosophy. Do you understand that? What did it stir up?
I would say it probably stirred up some feelings that I haven't shared. And I've maybe been afraid to share.
Okay, probably, maybe. Again, it's philosophy. We don't have time to do it now, but I want you to see how with words we try to create and protect ourselves. It probably stirred up some that maybe I haven't. That's like you've taken your cue from Mr. Gary. But you're not. You're expressing a philosophy.
Okay, this is where I have been honest with you. Sometimes I feel like when I'm trying to express myself, I get nitpicked for not saying it the right way.
Well, I will continue to nitpick for using language as sorcery.
Okay, and I admit that I have a lot to learn or unlearn, and I'm open to that.
I hope all of us are. Is that the ice machine?
Yeah.
Take it, big guy. Ice machine's giving us a cue.
Have some lunch.